The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 podcast.
For many, it was the shot heard around college football. A bombshell unlike any other. The It Just Means More conference left the rest of college athletics with its mouth wide open in shock and its collective jaw dropping. When the news broke at 3:40 p.m. on that Wednesday in the middle of 2021 media days in Hoover that Texas and Oklahoma were on the verge of joining the Southeastern Conference, it was really years in the making. The SEC has been slowly pulling away from the rest of college football, but with an impenetrable run of national titles, dominance in the NFL draft, titles in nearly every other sport, coupled with a powerhouse media rights deal, two of the biggest brands in collegiate sports realize exactly what everyone else has been saying for a long time. It's impossible to compete with the SEC, so we may as well join them. But the addition of Texas and OU is much more than that. This is the game changer of the new millennium. Something like this has never happened before. And even more upsetting to everyone else, it is not duplicatable. Give credit to Commissioner Greg Sankey and the leadership of the league for not standing still, for resting on its laurels when it would have been so easy to do so. College football is at a tipping point never previously seen. This isn't about today. This is about deep into the future. And while some have debated or even rolled their eyes in the past when the SEC has beaten its chest about its position, almost everyone now is simply shaking their collective heads and vying for second place. The University of Texas and Oklahoma are not only two of the winningest football programs, but they have been good at nearly everything else. They are two of the most easily identified brands, and just the rivalry alone between each other ranks among the most watched and eagerly anticipated matchups of the year in college football. In a reasonable short time, just consider the Red River rivalry becoming part of the conversation every year with the Iron Bowl, Egg Bowl, and Florida, Georgia. Among the many seminal moments in modern college football history, the 1984 Supreme Court case shattering the NCAA stranglehold on how many times a school could appear on television, the SEC title games, and others to follow to the birth of the BCS and ultimately the CFP, to the conference television networks and NIL, longtime veterans of the league have struggled to come up with a point of reference or time in history that comes close to matching this one. Suddenly, college conferences as we know them will no longer exist. The era of super conference has been born, and the domino effect on the game could be felt for a generation. And back in the SEC, what was taken for granted yesterday, the traditional rivalries, the common opponents, is now up in the air. Sometimes with change, there is apprehension and anxiety. But with this move, there seems to be real joy and excitement in most parts of the footprint. Fans in the SEC are always excited for the fall in football. Yet with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, the excitement level has just been ratcheted up to an all-time high. Welcome, Texas. Welcome, Oklahoma. We can't wait to make our acquaintance on your campus and at an SEC stadium near you. And we say hello to you on this Friday afternoon, and it is official now. The universities of Texas and Oklahoma have said yes to the SEC. When? We're still trying to sort all that out, and we will talk to the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference 90 minutes from now. Our next guest might as well be the commissioner. He seems to break most of the big stories. He is Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated. And Ross, great to have you with us. As someone who was watching all this in real time last week in Hoover, and of course have covered it ever since, your reaction to the fact that this is now official, it didn't take very long, did it?
No, it didn't. I was going through the timeline, Paul. 10 days, you know, story broke last Wednesday, and nine or 10 days is incredible to kind of go through each day and what happened and how the meetings were called and the different notifications sent and It's pretty clear that this happened too quickly for this to have been a new conversation. Obviously, it's several months old.
Ross, do we have any better idea now, with all the legal battles going on and threats, when this really started in earnest? I know everyone has offered varying opinions, and Oklahoma was a little more expansive today in its news conference. But do you have a better sense of when this got on the track?
Not really. I do know that, and I think it was reported maybe late last week, that it was around December, January that at least the SEC was approached seriously by Texas and or Oklahoma about this. And I don't get the sense that real serious discussions started then, but maybe started soon after. I would have guessed sometime this past spring, late spring, in order for this to move like it has. I can't imagine that at least serious discussions didn't start, at least two plus months ago.
Ross, and listen, in all the official announcements, and you understand the legal issues involved, everything is down the road 4 years. But in talking to people in and around these leagues, these schools, I know you don't guess as a reporter, but what's realistic here in terms of getting these two in the SEC and playing?
I talked yesterday with some SEC administrators and staff members to try to figure that out a little bit. It depends kind of who you talk to in the league and how much they say or want to reveal. But I will tell you what one of them told me, and this is maybe coming more from the TV side of things, is that there's almost no way that Texas and Oklahoma are in the Big 12 for four more years. That it will come before that. And that's just one person's opinion again. And then you talk to administrators. I've talked to a couple of administrators in the league that say, the intention is 2025. The Big 12 would have to want to settle and let them out in some way, because it doesn't sound like Texas and Oklahoma wants to pay the penalty, which is, I believe, close to $80 million each. And then even if they pay the penalty, from what I understand, there could be some legal issues to break some agreements, including a 99-year agreement that they signed with the Big 12 about, 9 or 10 years ago. But I think the Big 12, they would have to be the one, to come forward to Texas and Oklahoma and say, okay, you can leave early and here's what you have to do. If that doesn't happen, it's hard to see Texas and Oklahoma breaking away earlier than 2025. And I think the first person I mentioned, who's kind of with the TV side in the league, mentioned that there's no way they stay for four more years, because I think he and others believe that the Big 12 will move on. And at some point, maybe emotions and frustrations, the anger will subside, and they'll come to some kind of agreement, Paul, where Texas and Oklahoma join the league maybe 2023 or 2024.
And you mentioned the TV side, Ross, and we can sit here and act like that's not part of anything that I say this as an ESPN employee, that ESPN is not involved, and I'm not getting into the legal issue, but they play a big role in all of this, just as a suitor for the Big 12. I mean, they're currently a partner with Fox. Whether they are or not the next time around, I have no idea. But wouldn't common sense tell you that the Big 12 is better off sitting down with all of these parties, especially ESPN, and finding an exit strategy where they get something out of it other than you know, maybe a penalty and hurt feelings?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's why many people believe that will happen at some point. Right now, there's a lot of anger, right? A lot of emotion. Talked to Bob Bowlesby, was it yesterday, the day before? All my days are running together. But it's you know, he's very angry. And I think those things probably will subside. And you will maybe see the Big 12 come to the table and offer something along those lines of what you're talking about, offer a way out. It'll be maybe expensive, or maybe they'll get something in return, even more than, as you mentioned, even more than, you know, cash. Maybe it's some other kind of agreement. But I do think most believe that will eventually happen. And one other thing, too, that was brought to my attention is, you know, this would behoove the Big 12 to do it, because they need to rebuild their conference. And in order to do that, it's kind of like a marriage, you know, getting divorced. You don't want the person you just divorced to live under your home. You want to move on with your life and maybe find a new partner, right? And so in order to do that, you've got to move on. And so it seems to me that it would only help kind of the Big 12 to let Texas and Oklahoma go with some kind of arrangement and then move on and rebuild the conference.
Talking to Ross Dellinger. Ross, a lot of things that you wrote about overnight were really interesting. I want to get to something we haven't had much time to talk about, but every fan wants to know, what is this going to look like? And you spoke to a number of people involved, and you indicated in your piece that the SEC, as we now know it, is likely not to continue. And what I mean by that is East versus West. What's it going to look like, as best you know?
Yeah, well, it's real early, but don't you think that some of the conference executives, especially those who handle scheduling, haven't gotten a head start on this and hadn't been starting on it weeks, if not months before? I think the options are there, and they just got to pick an option. You know, they've got to get the athletic directors in a room and start voting on options. I think the first thing, Paul, is do you play 8, 9, or 10 games? It seems like there's an appetite in the league to maybe move to 9, especially with two more games. Last year, playing 10 conference games was a big success from everything I've heard, especially from the TV side, right? And so I think there's a little more of an appetite now to maybe play 9. So that's the first question. How many games are you going to play? The second thing is, are you going to have divisions, or are you going to have pods, or are you going to have neither? And there's a route to each one of those. You know, if you have divisions, probably the most eastern of schools, Alabama and Auburn, would probably have to move into the east, right? If you're adding Texas and Oklahoma to the west, and then you'd have to pick some kind of format. You know, if you do pods, it would be 4-14 pods naturally, and everybody would play there permanently. Every year would play their pod partner, and then they would rotate all the other members. And so what's coming, and then you could, Paul, you really don't have to have pods or divisions, right? You could have just like the Big 12 has done, right? There's no division, no pod, and basically what happens is a team would have 3 permanent opponents and would rotate 6 or 5, if you're going to do 8 games, rotational opponents. And everybody would play everybody at least every other year. Of course, the problem with all this, right, is choosing permanent opponents. If you do this format, which seems to be kind of gaining steam in the league, is the 3-6 format, 3 permanent, 6 rotational. Got to pick those permanent opponents, and Paul, it's an unenviable task. Mark Womack in the league, I know he heads up scheduling, to choose the permanent opponents for each team. If this is the model they do choose.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that meeting lasting a year because, I mean, some are obvious, but some really aren't. And if you're in the second or third tier in terms of winning percentage, you're fighting like crazy to avoid some of the games that that we currently have.
Right. And when you do choose those permanents, you've got to keep in mind, right, the traditional longstanding rivalries that honestly have held up any changes in the scheduling format, right? The Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky, those four teams play each other permanently. And historically, they'd like to keep it that way for obvious reasons, I think. And then you have the Alabama-Georgia game in the the Auburn-Georgia game and the Alabama-Tennessee game, longstanding rivalries. Those teams want to keep that. And that those two things, as we wrote about in that story, have kind of held up the elimination of the permanent game, the cross-divisional permanent game, for years. And it's really kind of been a divisive topic within the league. And so you've got to try to preserve those permanents, those matchups. And I think you can do it to an extent, but then you add Texas and Oklahoma, Paul, and it gets a little more complicated. You add two more teams that have rivalries themselves, right? Texas and Oklahoma, first of all, they're going to be playing every year. And from what I understand, they're not going to move their game to the end of the year. They'll play, you know, around the Texas State Fair, or at least they're expected to. So they would be permanent. But then you have Texas and Texas A&M. You know, do you match them up every year for an end of season game? Do you match Oklahoma and Missouri and try to set up an end season game? The end season rivalry matchups is going to be the kind of the most difficult and tricky thing through this whole scheduling fiasco.
Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated, who has been all over this story. Ross, great to have you on. I know that we have about 4,000 more questions, but you also have a day job that we need to let you get back to. But thanks for coming on.
Sorry, Paul, anytime.
Great stuff. What a fascinating conversation there. We're just getting started. I know we've had coverage all day long, and we'll continue. Kirk Herbstreit joins us at the bottom. Really eager to hear from him. McElroy at the top of the next hour. And then that's the interview that we're all waiting for. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner. And how about this? Lar Rutledge and Joe Tessitore. Said Golden from the Austin American-Statesman. And we closed the show with the commissioner that got all this started about nearly 30 years ago, Roy Kramer. He was a commissioner when South Carolina and Arkansas joined the league. So we will talk to him about where we are today and also get to your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back here, and let's get some calls here. That's what we do best. The guests are just part of the window dressing. Let's get to the callers, and James is in San Antonio. Hello, James.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Good, man. I just had a – first of all, that was a great interview, Salinger, by the way. I think it was fantastic. But I'm curious what your thoughts are. What constitutes a team being back? Because it seems like every time Texas wins a game, they're back. They're back again. What are we doing?
That,
are we going back to
that,
mediocre?
Was that Sam Ehlinger who proclaimed they were back, or was that somebody else?
I think every quarterback that's played for them for the last 10 years have said they're back at some point. It's that, you know, TU has this reputation that they've been this powerhouse every other year winning national titles, and that's just not the case. So I don't know if there's some type of science behind it that constitutes a team being back. Maybe it's just back to the middle of the pack.
That does rhyme, by the way. Jim is up next in Colorado. Good afternoon, Jim.
Hey, Paul, thanks for taking my call. You know, I just wanted to address the attitude that seemed to be expressed by a lot of callers last week that everybody from A&M was against this whole thing, that we're afraid to play Oklahoma and Texas. And I just want to say welcome to the SEC. The vote was held. It was unanimous, and it should have been unanimous. The attitude of everybody I know is bring it on, little sister. Little sister always follows what big brother does. And it took Texas 10 years to get around to it. And the way we look at it, this is just going to, at least as far as Texas is concerned, is that this is just going to be another conference game in the win column. The bad part of it is that if we have Texas on the schedule, it's going to hurt our strength of schedule. Because, you know, within the past 6 weeks, you have said that Texas football is irrelevant. Is that right?
Jim, I have to say I have no recollection of making that statement. That's something that you must have seen on some black website, dark hole, some.
The word was either irrelevant or there was some other word that you applied to. Anyway, like you, I would like to see the whole thing start this year instead of waiting until 2025.
Yeah, I agree with you. The idea, I mean, and first of all, I don't think we'll have to wait 4 years, but yeah, I think I'm ready to see. The only shot we're going to get this year, I believe, is Texas and Arkansas. Not to put any pressure on Sam Pittman and the guys from Fayetteville, but the rest of the SEC is going to be watching that game very closely. That is week two of the college football season, and if I have to ride my scooter to Fayetteville, I'm going. We will take a break. More to come. 855-242-7285. Kirk Herbstreit joins us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And back on this historic afternoon, we can't wait to talk to the face of college football from ESPN, Kirk Herbstreit, joining us. And Kirk, thank you for the time and your reaction to really a game changer today of epic proportion.
Well, I guess my reaction, if you're looking at it through the lens of an SEC fan, this is obviously a historic day. Whether you agree or disagree, the reality is, objectively speaking, bringing in those brands, Texas and Oklahoma, into the SEC, which was already the premier conference in college football, and you add those two brands, I mean, I'm a traditionalist, so I hate to see some of this fragmented the way it has become in college sports. But if you just look at it, what does this mean for the SEC? You start thinking about games like Oklahoma against Georgia, which we had a great Rose Bowl a few years ago, Oklahoma against Florida, Texas against Florida, Texas against LSU, just so many potentially huge games in this conference. I mean, it's historic. We'll be talking about this for 40, 50, 60, 70 years, how big a deal this is. So from that lens, congratulations to Greg Sankey and the SEC. And this is like Popeye eating his spinach. I mean, this is a huge day. The SEC was already the strongest, and it gets stronger by adding those two brands in.
Yeah, there are a couple of lenses, other lenses you can look at, though, Kirk. And I know you come from a football, you come from a football family with your dad, a stand-in for the Buckeyes, and you as well. But if you go longer lens and look at the evolution of college football, what is this telling us about what is happening today and really into the future?
Well, I think it tells us a few things. Number one, my thoughts right away go to what is left of the Big 12. I mean, you imagine in the Big 10, if you took Ohio State and Michigan out of it, what would be left of the Big 10? You know, if you took Alabama and Auburn type of teams out of the SEC, what's left of the SEC. I mean, it's hard to lose your you know the programs that really are your identity. And so I think my first thought is the Big 12 going to survive? Where are they going to go? Are they going to become a group of five type of conference? Are others within the Big 12 going to leave? And where are we going, you know, in a year from now? What are these presidents thinking behind closed doors? And who are they getting calls from? And what are they what's happening? Because things are happening, right? We know that. So that's one thought. The next thought is, are we headed to potentially four super conferences? You know, is the Pac-12 going to get a bunch more teams? Is the Big Ten going to try to gather some teams? Is the ACC going to try to gather some teams? Are we headed down that path? And at the end of the day, I'm a traditionalist. I've always loved certain regions. I love the pride that each of these regions take within their style of football. I love when these teams meet in bowl games and they get together and the SEC wants to show the Big Ten what's up and the Big Ten wants to show the SEC. I love that about this sport. And I hope we don't lose that. But are we going to potentially see that, you know, these four conferences break off and form their own world and create their own 12-team playoff and their own legislative body? And that's going to be the new power world of college athletics and college football. Is that where we're going? It kind of feels like this is the beginning and the first few dominoes falling towards that. But again, we're all just left to speculate. I mean, none of us know anything right now, and we're all just kind of left to wonder where we're headed with the future. But clearly, money has never driven college athletics more than it is in 2021.
And Kirk, on that front, and I don't think either one of us want to act like, you know, we're not part of this big engine, you especially, but you know, there are a lot of, you know, great college programs that you're affiliated with and have friends that are a part of, who it's hard to imagine them being able to keep up with what's happening here at the very top, is it not?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Yeah, yeah. I that's why I think if you're a president right now or of a board of one of these schools, it's kind of left in limbo and you're wondering where are we heading. You're trying to potentially find a place to land. You know, you want to be with one of those super conferences to assure yourself not only financial stability, but you want to be able to be in the big race. You know, you want to be in the place where everybody's having a chance to compete for the big prize and getting into a playoff potentially, and to be able to sell your recruits on a vision. So I guess we could always look at this, whether it was the BCS or the playoffs since going back to 2014. There's always kind of been a haves versus have-nots. You know, it started with Boise States of the world going way back to the BCS, and even in the playoff era with UCF and teams like Temple and Cincinnati last year, they've always kind of hit a ceiling in the rankings. So they've never really been a part of the playoff, even though it hasn't necessarily been a written rule. You kind of felt that. And now you wonder, are the leaders just kind of clearly just saying, we're going to separate, basically put the haves over here, the have-nots over here, going to go form our own world and our own governing body, and we're done with this world. We're going to make this more realistic and more current, more up-to-date model of big-time college football. We're going to go over here and do that. I mean, I don't know. It makes some sense with name, image, likeness out there, with transfer portal out there. You got to wonder, with the amount of money that we're talking about that's going to go into all this, if we're just around the next corner, is it, forget name, image, and likeness, are we talking about a players union that's going to be formed? Are we talking about part of a scholarship and name, image, and likeness? Are we talking about paying players in addition, separate from name, image, and likeness? I don't know where it's going to go. All these things are things I never really thought I was going to see in my lifetime. I never really thought 10 years ago, if you asked me about this, I didn't think this was ever possible, that this would happen. But I can either put my head in the sand and be upset and ignore it all, or I can, as you said, I try to be the voice of reason for this sport, not just the SEC, but the whole sport. I can pull myself up and look around and try to put my arms around it. I don't have to be happy with everything, but I got to understand it. I got to try to understand where we're going with this sport. And I'm doing the best that I can to be as informed as I can. But I don't even think decision makers and folks that are really involved in this at this point know where this potentially could lead. There's just too many, honestly, too many unknowns as we sit here in July, late July, early August of 2021. It'll be a fascinating conversation when you and I talk a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, and look back at, remember that day Texas and Oklahoma joined the SEC? Look where we are now. I think this will be a day that will define our future, but it's going to take time to get to that future.
Kirk, before you go, you have so many relationships with coaches around college football from the very top on down. I'm curious if you could give us some, maybe a composite. I'm not asking you to identify because they're confidential conversations, but what are some of the coaches around this game saying, not only about what we've gone through with NIL, but what's happening right now as we speak with Oklahoma and Texas joining what's now a Super League?
I would say the overwhelming majority are not comfortable with where we are. They don't agree with where we're heading. It's the rules of engagement. So they're going to adjust accordingly to try to make it work for their program. When I was into Tuscaloosa for the spring game and we sat down with Coach the day before the game, it's always one of my favorite, I get a chance to visit with him all year, but leading into the spring game, it's typically me and Joey Galloway and in this case, Joe Tess, who's usually there. And Coach just kind of, he's a little more relaxed than he is when you meet with him, obviously, in the fall. And I love talking to him. It's one thing to go over his team and what about this guy at linebacker. You get through that and you start talking about name, image, and likeness. What do you think about the transfer portal? And man, he should be the czar of college football. He should be the commissioner of the sport because he has so many really good thoughts. Not that just they're about Alabama or just about the SEC. He has a very broad view of how he breaks down what's right in his mind for the sport and what's a concern. And he was very candid about the transfer portal. He doesn't think, he said this publicly. I don't know if he thinks it's a great thing, but he said, what am I going to do, not participate? I mean, I'm going to, of course, he goes, this will just create a bigger gap, and it will. Transfer portal will only create a bigger gap because teams like Troy and teams like Southern Miss and teams in the MAC, a kid at Ball State or Miami of Ohio, has a great freshman or sophomore year. You don't think Alabama or LSU or Kentucky or Mississippi State or Ohio State or whoever is going to – it's almost like it's a minor league area where you just go grab, oh, that receiver, he was all conference, we'll take him. Oh, out here in Conference USA, we need a running back, we'll take him. How is that good for the game? So I think there's a lot of concern about the transfer portal. I think there's a lot of concern about name, image, and likeness and understanding the rules and how it's being used. You know, it's one thing to have an established star. Let's just go back to 2 or 3 years ago. Tua is the starting quarterback at Alabama. You know, he's led them to a national championship when he came in for Jalen. He's coming back for his second year. There's a guy that should be able to take advantage of name, image, and likeness. Najee Harris, he's been there for 3 years, coming into his last year. There's a guy that should take advantage. But to convince a recruit or to talk about, well, what did you hear about last week about name, image, likeness on that recruiting trip? Oh, they said that? Well, if you come here, we'll do this for you. That is not what the rule was intended to do, but it's happening. And who's policing it? So, man, there's so much right now that's going on in this sport beyond Texas and OU coming in and realignment. There's a lot of coaches, like I am, scratching their head, wondering how is this good for the game and where in the heck are we headed? So, interesting times, man. Very, very interesting times in a sport that you and I love dearly.
Kirk Herbstreit, can't wait to talk to you very soon about what's going to be happening on the field. Kirk, many, many thanks for dropping by. We love it.
Congratulations on your new deal, man. I texted you that, but just wanted to say it. And I know all of us who follow the SEC every day love hearing you and your thoughts and your listeners. It year-round, it keeps the blood boiling. So congrats on that. Happy to keep you around and wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Kirk. I look forward to talking to you soon. Kirk Herbstreit joining us, and what a conversation that was. Wow. We will take a break on this historic Friday afternoon. Much more to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back, and Galen is up next in North Carolina. Hello, Galen. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, Paul. I'm a long-suffering Sooner fan from Asheville.
Oh, wonderful.
Happy you took my call.
I'm delighted. Thank you.
First-time caller. Now that I finally had to watch you, I've really been favorably impressed.
Well, thank you very much. We're not as bad as the reputation.
Actually, you know, that is a very good show. I can see why you're making all that money. For a little perspective, I grew up in Norman in the 50s and 60s, a couple of blocks from the stadium. My family was close to the program. For instance, my father was a personal friend of Bud Wilkinson.
Oh, man.
So from that old-timey perspective, I'd like to say that the only thing I'm not delighted about in this whole SEC move is that we have to drag Texas along with us. I know that you said that you want to find out what the cultures are like at your new school's fan bases.
Sure.
And I've been watching, and you have had a whole ton of Texas culture dumped all over you. I mean, to hear caller after caller from Texas bragging about how great they are and how the SEC better watch out for them and how they have all this money, you know, as if that's an accomplishment. Considering their on-field performance, it's just so weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, again, I think I understand the Texas culture a little bit, not that much, not as much as you do, but I think it's kind of, yeah. I can't remember who said it yesterday, but not to go Wall Street, but I think there'll be a little bit of a correction here with Texas and everyone else, and this thing will settle down. And I think Texas, I am extremely excited about Texas because I hate to see that program where it's been. I lived in Alabama for a long time and watched Alabama lose to Louisiana Monroe and Northern Illinois. And I couldn't believe my eyes. And now I see it as we all do where it currently is. And I think Texas is very capable of that. They were just in the wrong place, and that will all work out. Anyway, we're heading to a break. A lot of guests today, a lot of calls. Commissioner 35 minutes away. We have Tessitore and Laura Rutledge in the next hour. And Greg McElroy is up next.